You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
All right, that was awesome.
So we've got all this kind of new stuff happening, and
holding a microphone,
trying to Facebook and multitask, which I don't know if that's going to work so well for me.
We're forgetting a very important thing. Are you ready?
Oh yeah, hold on. Here, let me get the mic down for you.
Now we can start the show.
Right. We waited our turn over at Barrel House before the show tonight. I mean, we had a sip of some Irish whiskey, but otherwise, no beers yet. And decided our first beer would be a Guinness here on the show. We crack it open.
Probably so. So welcome back to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. This is our pre-St. Patty's Madness show. A week before.
Yeah, we're just trying to give people a chance to get ready for it if they're not ready for it yet. I mean,
ready for it just by looking at this table right now.
And for anyone who's listening out there right now, you can go to our Facebook page, Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. And underneath the logo there, there's a little thing that says, Ustream. That's what it says. And you can click on that and watch us right on the Facebook page. It's also streaming on Hophead Said. So if you're not on Facebook, what are you waiting for, first of all? I mean, come on. Everyone's doing it. All the cool kids are. So
everybody's
you should be there.
FB. It's FB, actually. So
oh, FB.
You're saying the whole word.
See, that's tough. See, I joined it when it was Facebook, before it was FB, I think.
No, now it's just FB, so.
All right. So you could go to Facebook or through hopheadset.com and click the Happy Hour logo. And then you can see, you can watch us live in the video. We got my phone set up over there streaming us. And I'm sharing the link right now through Facebook if it goes, and you're pointing over there. What should I grab over there?
Well, speaking of FB and Facebook, are we going to do a little
T-shirt giveaway.
So something new that we're going to start the show every week with.
So we've got scroll down on the Happy Hour page just a little bit, and you'll see a link that says, hey, I'm listening live on My Buzz Radio. So you go ahead and click that, share the link, actually. So you need to share the link and let everyone, all your friends, know that you're watching or listening to us. And then you'll be entered into a chance to win a super cool Firestone Walker extra large T-shirt. So
thanks again to Firestone.
Right, absolutely. So we got that on a nice little Barrel Works trip that we took. So at the end of the show, in the last call, we'll look to see who all shared, and then we'll pick a winner randomly, of course, and we'll go from there. Now, I'm wondering if we should start saying, if you haven't won anything in the last 30 days, go ahead.
The rules and regs?
Right, right. And, you know, go through the whole thing. But I think we can probably wait on that. What do you think?
I think we'll be cool. But so this is, we're dubbing this the St. Patrick's Day priming session.
Priming session, yeah. We're getting our everything other than the vodka that's sitting in front of us, which I don't even know where's Absolute?
Sweden.
All right. So other than that, everything here, and well, I guess the Kahlua probably isn't either, but we're doing our best to make cocktails this evening that are St. Patrick's Day inspired. And no, we're not drinking any green beer.
Please don't drink green beer ever. Nobody should ever drink green beer. We will not be serving green beer. You should not serve green beer at your house. No one should serve green beer.
So we were talking earlier, and I think the last time I celebrated St. Patrick's Day was probably when I thought it was okay to drink a green beer. And so it's been a long time, 15 years probably. And so, I'm looking forward to what we've got going on here in front of us for sure. Instead of Miller Lite with green food coloring, that's for sure.
Yeah, food coloring and the... Well, unlike you, I've celebrated St. Patty's every year just from working, and it's actually one of my favorites. Everyone's Irish on St. Patty's Day, but we were talking earlier of how it started. Does anybody even really care how it started, what St. Patty's Day means? Because it just means let's go have a drink, right?
Yeah.
That's like the literal translation, loosely translated from Irish is let's go have a drink. And this year it's on a Sunday, which means Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Right. It's going to be a crazy weekend for sure. Yeah, I think If I remember right, there was some guy, I can't even remember what his name was, but there was, he did something with snakes, and there was a bunch of snakes.
Name was probably Patrick.
Was
right?
it? Oh, okay. Well, see, there you go. So then he played his fife and led the snakes out of town, something like that.
And so we drink on that on his birthday. Is that what?
Well, yeah. So we drink to celebrate that there's no more snakes in Ireland. I guess
that is awesome.
I'm fine with it. I mean, other than I'm hoping that we don't continue the stereotypical Irish sort of celebration by punching each other.
Right. So. We hope that many people don't do that on St. Paddy's Day. That is a risk that you take, especially some of the drinks that you wanted to make today, Chris, which I'm all in.
All right.
But car bombs and these things that just, I mean, the name already kind of implies that you're going to do something bad.
I know. They do sound kind of scary. And I think I posted the recipes on our Facebook page. So if you want to play along with us, you're more than welcome to. We'll be starting the car bomb cocktail mixing, I guess, in, I don't know, 5-10 minutes somewhere in there. So you've got plenty of time to look up the recipe, get to your cabinet, and get everything laid out in front of you. So,
we're drinking a fine Guinness draft in the, which I used to think was a 16-ounce can, but a little less. But this is a great little can with the widget that gives you that simulated nitrogen pour, which is really cool. But this is a dry stout, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is. And what's interesting about Guinness is that from a beer geek standpoint, and maybe one that just misconceptions about what Guinness is and how light or heavy it is, what, you know, all these kinds of myths about Guinness. But Guinness can taste a lot very different from one place to another, whether it's being poured out of a tap that is full carbonation.
Right.
It can have a pretty a harsh carbonic bite to it, you know, and then you're really going to get those roasty flavors. If it's in a nitrogen tap, you know, which is a lot of places have it now. So you don't really, you know, it's nice and creamy. There's some good roasty kind of chocolate coffee flavors in there I really like. And it gives it a heavier mouthfeel too. So it feels a little than actually what it is. And then some people get the foreign extra stout, which when they get that one, and then that one comes in at 8%, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
And what did we have here? I can't even.
I want to say.
It's in the 4%
range. 4%, yeah.
It's no more than 5%. So a low beer, low gravity beer, fairly light too. So that's one of the things about this and I remember seeing some kind of ad campaign somewhere, and they're talking about how Guinness was the first light beer, or the original light beer, because this thing comes in at 98 calories, something like that, for 12 ounces. So, I mean, it really is, you know.
Zero fat, too.
Well, yeah, that's always an important thing when you're drinking beer. But, you know, you look at like Michelob Ultra or Miller 64,
64,
whatever it is, you know.
And
yeah, you know, go ahead and drink some tonic water or something, you know, some diet tonic water, and you probably have more flavor in it. Whereas this one, you know, for 30 more calories, you're pouring yourself a tasty beer.
Sure. I'm definitely guilty of the I thought Guinness was strong. I mean, early in my drinking career, even though I grew up around all these drinks and stuff, I still, if we'd go out or something and somebody would get Guinness, I'd be like, man, that's pretty crazy.
That's one badass.
That's a badass kind of drinking Guinness. And then when I learned that it was not so strong, I was like, let me chase that. And then started trying it. It's like, okay. And I love stouts now. And Guinness is definitely a light stout compared to, I mean, especially like Old Rasputin.
Yeah.
Almost 10% Imperial Russian stout. I mean, this would, if you put these side by side, I mean, it's pale in comparison. But definitely, this is probably the biggest misconception, I think, is dark beer is strong.
Right.
And Guinness is the best example because, like you said, not too many calories.
4 or 5%.
Yeah, 4 or 5% alcohol, probably never more than 5. And actually really easy to drink. It's just people may misperceive the roastiness as like a strongness, but the roast from the malt. But, yeah, I was definitely in that club of, wow, Guinness.
Yeah, I knew somebody who will rename nameless for this purpose, but he loved to drink his Guinness, and we loved to make fun of his face every time he took a drink of that, because man, he wanted to love that beer so much, but the grimace he made after every single sip, it was like, and you know what, and then at that point, you know, talking the mid 90s when I was in college, that is I was a Miller Lite person. You know, fill that beer up to the very top of that glass. No head. I don't want any head on it, I want Miller Lite. That's it. Just something that would go down easy.
There is something to be said, though, for a Guinness on nitrogen with the right pour and that just the head. Just it just looks beautiful. It's a beautiful-looking beer. It's a patient beer. People are like, you got to rush the pour. But you can't. You can't really rush a pour of a nitrogen beer, and it's worth the wait. And so you just order one for while you have like a little bit left in your glass.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of YouTube videos and about the perfect pour, and it's something like 119 seconds is what it's supposed to take from the time they open the tap to the time you get to drink it. It's supposed to be 119 seconds.
Right.
And you should watch the cascade on that too. And then there was some sort of physics lessons on why are the bubbles cascading down. And so, I mean, just take a look at them. I wish I would have thought in far enough ahead to pull that up. But any beer, really, that's on nitrogen is a beautiful thing to watch. And what I really like about it, too, is like these cans, our glasses didn't have enough room to fit the whole beer in it.
Right.
But you could pour it, you just turn that thing upside down and let it go. And because it has its nitrogen, it's not going to give you a giant foamy head that flows over the top of your glass.
I haven't had a can of Guinness in a long time. It's pretty tasty.
So, and then I also brought along Murphy's Irish Stout. So
the little stepbrother.
Yeah, we'll get to do a tasting, I guess, side by side. I don't know which one I'll use for the car bomb because everywhere I see it says you have to use Guinness, so I suppose I'll use Guinness. But I really want to crack open that Murphy's too, just to kind of get an idea of how they taste side by side.
Yeah, so that was one of the big beer myths. This just came out this week, I think I was reading it.
For all the
beer myths that won't die,
right?
That won't go away.
And what's interesting about the beer myths that won't die is, you know, half of those were about Guinness, and Guinness was the example that a dark beer is heavy, a dark beer is high calories or high alcohol, on and on and on. But we did put the link to that on the Happy Hour Facebook page, so you can take a look and figure out which myths you've been propagating over the years. So looks like we're getting ready to kind of hit out for our first break here, and we're gonna have to finish our beers. Well, maybe I can actually. I'll just drink this one down, and then I'll do the car bomb in this one.
Oh, yeah, I gotta catch up then.
There we go. So we'll be right back. But for those of you who are just tuning in, make sure you go to our Facebook page, and you can click on the Ustream and watch us there live streaming in the studio. And then we're coming to you live from Ventura, beautiful downtown Ventura.
Right next to the majestic Ventura Theater.
My Buzz Radio. So give us a couple minutes, listen to a couple Irish drinking songs, and we're going to finish our beer and get ready for the Irish Car Bomb. So
happy hour with Joby and Curtis. Thank you.
You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. Okay, welcome back, everyone. And if you were watching the stream there, you're watching Joby and I mix a couple cocktails before during the break, and we're ready to taste some things. So I have never done an Irish car bomb, and some people, it's similar to what were we talking about? A cement mixer, cement mixer. So yeah, it was a half shot of Jameson, half shot of Bailey's. Evidently, those two like to play nice together. So there's no problems there, but it's when you drop it into the beer that the Bailey starts to curdle in there. And so it's odd to me that the Bailey's is actually, or I mean, the beer is what actually starts the curdling process.
Yeah, or lemon juice, apparently.
they're a bunch of nasty
that doesn't sound good at all.
Sounding Bailey's recipes.
But if anybody wants to try it out there, you put a shot of, well, if you want to do shots, you do a shot of lemonade, keep it in your mouth, shot of Bailey's, and then you mix them all up in your mouth. And that's the cement mixer.
Right. I'm not looking forward. I'm not going to try that one. But, you know, we were earlier you're talking about over at Bear House that next weekend you're probably going to be doing a lot of these car bombs. And it just seems like a gigantic mess for sure.
They are. They're they can be really dangerous.
So
glass can break.
Yeah.
If you drop it down too hard.
Drop it in too hard. So I'm not going to do a drop because I don't want to have to clean the place when we're all done. So
you
I'm
can just pour
gonna,
it in.
I'm gonna give it because I think the whole thing about it is you drink it until that shot falls out too, right? I mean, isn't that the bomb
Basically,
part?
It all mixes together.
So we'll see what happens here. But any of the descriptions and the bartenders that the videos that I was watching, because, you know, I needed a video to see how to make a car bomb, was they said you got to drink it fast because otherwise it starts to coagulate, and then evidently it tastes bad.
It
separates or something. But if you do it fast enough, then it tastes like chocolate milk. So I'm all for chocolate milk. I don't know about you. So I'm gonna give this a shot, and I think Joby's gonna talk over me as we get going here.
I'm gonna do a play by play on you. So
play by play.
Really easy in the shot glass. I mean, I tried to do a reverse layer, but you could probably do the Bailey's first and layer the whiskey on top. But
right.
I know it can be done. I've seen some of the bartenders do it. But yeah. Anyway, so in half a shot and half a shot of each, and then probably half a pint of beer. Is usually what you can do, because you don't want too much. You don't want to try to drink a pint. No, that'd be pretty tough. So Curtis is. That's all mixing together now, going down. How does that taste? Chocolate milk.
That was delicious. Let me tell you something. I wasn't expecting quite that much deliciousness, but yeah, and I mean, evidently it didn't coagulate. So
that's good.
But yeah, so then it starts to mix about halfway, and then at the end, then it's all this really sweet chocolate milk flavor. So it looks like you're pouring it the other way, or no? Wait, no, we did the same thing. So Bailey's, there we go.
So is it the stout mixing with the Bailey's, or I don't know what's making that chocolate milk, but. Sounds good.
Oh, definitely, yeah. The bitter chocolate flavors in there, and then all of the Bailey's flavor. And here goes Joby. He's being real careful. Dump it, and now there it goes. Glug glug glug. So you get the he's got a milk mustache. He's got milk.
That is fantastic.
It is a good one, isn't it? I don't know. I was kind of worried about it because generally. The last bomb I ever remember having was a Jaeger bomb, I think, which was
with
not
Red Bull.
No, this would have been, you know, it would have been something like Dr. Pepper or something. I mean, this was pre Red Bull. This was pre energy drinks, definitely. Right.
It does really mix well together. That is awesome. Nice combination. I wonder who the first person to drop. Very specifically, Jameson and Bailey's into their Guinness, but that right. was delicious. Or yes. Murphy's in our case.
Yeah, that's true. It was Murphy's. No, no, this was still the.
Oh
part.
No, you're
that
right.
Was still
you're
part,
right.
That was still part Guinness because yeah. if it is if you don't put Guinness in it, then it's not considered technically. It's not considered an Irish car bomb. On any of the stuff that I was reading, it was not. You have to use Guinness, and right. people were very specific about that. So one of the things that I kind of. Being a pacifist and a hippie kind of liberal sort of guy, I hate the term car bomb.
It's not the so most like, flattering term right, for so, a drink.
Well, and especially since I kind of, you know, there's the Irish have had a hard enough time as is, and then to name a drink after something that is synonymous with carnage.
Obviously, it's an American cocktail.
It must be.
I don't think they even do them in Ireland, but
yeah, if they did. You would probably get punched right in the junk if you went into the bar and you ordered an Irish car bomb. Well, so what are you talking about?
I got a little trivia for you. This is right. older than I thought. Thought to be invented in 1979 at Wilson's Saloon in Norwich, Connecticut.
Yeah, see, there you go. An American drink.
Well, and that just seems like it's been around a lot longer. Well, probably because I wouldn't have been drinking in 1979, so that's probably right. why
and
I think
in
that.
And just thinking back in history and that whole Irish liberation movement. Right. So that was certainly. I mean, I was seven at the time, so there was. I have no idea what was happening worldwide. You know, so that could be it. What do we've got? And then after this, we poured ourselves.
I'm very interested to try. Also,
Irish Russian.
The Irish Russian, which I scaled it down. Which I just did it into parts, which is always a nice way if you ever get in trouble. Just do parts. So. The full drink is one shot of vodka. We used Absolut today. One shot Kahlua, a squirt of Coke, which is very hard to do out of a can, and then fill the rest with Guinness.
I'm not sure you could ever do a squirt of Coke. How do you?
I guess if you have the bar gun or something, you just hit it once.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yeah, you just like just a tap on the on the thing. But
that was always throwing me. So I don't.
You got to smell this though. There is a really
there. You've got
it's like a peppery. What?
There's some. Well, the coffee definitely from the Kahlua,
yeah,
coming through, and then the soda is kind of throwing that up. I think all the carbonation coming through that. So I don't know. I don't think this is a shooter drink. This is a
no. This
drink.
Is a sipper.
Okay.
So it's like it'd be like your white. You're actually a Black Russian.
Black Russian.
No cream
Russian
in this one, but your Irish Russian. That's tasty.
Damn! I picked some.
Two good drinks
right out of the gate. I mean, I was just looking through them. So, some of you, I should probably back up a little bit because, I mean, we were just so excited to have our first beer that we just kind of shot right out of the gate. That last week we told you there was going to be a police officer in here giving us breathalyzers. Well, because I am totally inept at reading an email and somebody telling me that they can't come in on the 7th, but they can come in on the 14th. What do? I go and schedule them for the 7th. So that's why there's no police officer here. He will be here.
A good day to breathalyze us.
If we walked outside, they'd be happy to do that. So, but they will be here next week for sure.
Which will be a great double guest show.
It will be a double guest show with a new brewery that's opening up in LA. So last night, I'm just like fuming that I was so stupid on doing this. And then finally, my wife says, well, what about Irish cocktails? And I say, hey, I send a text to Joby. Sounds great. Let's do that. And then all of a sudden I could sleep well, you know. And so I was laying in bed and I was looking through cocktails. And some of them sounded really great, but you needed shakers and all this. And I was just like, no, I can't. Ice, how am I going to keep this cold? It's going to be hard enough keeping the beer cold while we get over here.
Yeah, and these are nice ones that you can make at home with, you know, probably have some of this stuff in your bar already. And even if you go out to a bar, you know, if somebody ordered this at our place, it wouldn't be, like, so out of the question to make it. It's like, oh, all right, a little squirt of Coke, and we'll top you off with some stout.
Right,
This is very good, actually. I like this one.
Yeah, so looking through, going through the list, and there were a couple of them that were really great ideas that had some good names. Like, one was Irish, I Wish I Was Sober. But then when I looked at it, there was nothing in there that had to do with Ireland. It was like tequila, and it was pineapple juice, and there were some other things. And I thought, how is this? And maybe it had cream de menthe, so it was green. You have to be careful when you're looking, when you do Irish drinks, like a Google search, because anything that's green comes up on it. And so, kind of take a look through them. And so you're looking up one here. We looked at a couple that we were surprised that they were even called Irish drinks.
Yeah, some of them are just, like you said, green, or some of them have nothing to do with St. Patrick's Day, but they're just like sound good. Not to get ahead, but we're going to do some whiskey tasting here too. The one that I learned from one of our bartenders is Jameson, and I love ginger beer. And I like Dark and Stormies. And
I don't know if I've ever had a ginger beer.
Never had it.
That's different than
that's ginger, not a ginger ale.
That's different than ginger ale.
No, because it's actually brewed. It's just not fermented. Uh-huh. So it's brewed just like a beer with ginger root. And if you've never had one, do you like ginger?
Ginger. I'm growing into it, but if it's a real heavy ginger, then
Ginger beer has real heavy ginger.
Are you talking like the shaved ginger with sushi flavor, or are you talking like a ginger snap flavor?
More of the shaved sushi.
Yeah,
flavor.
That would be.
No, you know what? Not really, because that one has more of that. It's got that kind of pickled taste. One's different.
Okay.
But Dark and Stormy is one of my favorite drinks. That's usually like a summertime drink. So you get not to go to the Caribbean now, but a Gosling's dark rum and a ginger beer. And everyone thinks ginger beer is alcohol. There's no alcohol in ginger beer. So get yourself a nice tall glass, fill it with rocks, ice, and you do Jameson. I'm sorry, you do Gosling's dark rum, and then fill the rest with ginger beer. It is so refreshing in the summertime. And you drink a bunch of them, and you don't even think like you're drinking. So there's another, there's an Irish version.
But you have to be careful about that one, too.
You got to be careful because you stand up, and yeah, you're like, wow, I only had like four or five of those. But you substitute Jameson for it, and it's really good, too. There's something that happens with the whiskey and the ginger beer that comes out. So Jameson and ginger is very good. You could do rye, bourbon, any of that, but Jameson's nice. Jameson ginger, that you can order. You know, a couple years ago, you couldn't find ginger beer at any bar. Nobody would even carry that. They'd be like, what are you talking about? But because of Moscow Mules have become, like, super popular again, kind of the renaissance of Moscow Mules.
What's a Moscow Mule?
That's ginger beer and vodka. That's all with a squeeze of lemon. Okay. Lime, sorry, not lemon.
Okay.
So that's a Moscow Mule. But years ago, you would have said Moscow Mule. People are like, what are you talking about? Even it's like, what is ginger beer? What is a Moscow Mule? So because of the popularity of that, now you can find ginger beer at bars. So maybe for St. Patrick's Day, you could have Jameson and ginger, too. It's just a nice option. And it keeps you – it's refreshing. The only thing, there's a lot of sugar in ginger beer. It's the only thing. But it's delicious.
I'm talking a 700-calorie drink.
There. Yeah, you're talking. I think there's
wait, wait a second. That blows the 120. So
I think there's like 40 grams of sugar in a bottle of ginger beer.
I'm on – that is not an Atkins diet kind of thing. That's
loaded. No, but it's so tasty.
It sounds like it. Well, this Irish Russian, I tell you what.
I like this one.
And one of the things, giving a shout out to my mom, she loves her white Russians. And so just going through, so this would be, this is a nice kind of, I don't know, alternative to it. And I don't know what it is. I mean, the splash of Coke, you are a superb mixologist.
Well, thank you. We try. It's scaled down version. It was a little, you know. Tough. This is good though.
Yeah, and this is a perfect way to experiment with it on top of it. So if you know, we made the whole recipe, and then you just split it between the two glasses there. Right?
That's it, pretty much. Just kind of scale it.
So I suppose you could probably put an ice cube in it.
I would do this on the rocks. Yeah, like a just like a Black Russian. If you do it on the rocks, that'd be nice because you just have your drink and then you can keep sipping on it, but. And like I said, you could probably ask for this at a place. They wouldn't look at you too weird because it's totally doable.
Well, one of the things, so I'm looking at both of these drinks. So you split it in half, and I love tasting and I love sampling all that. But I think about when I go home making this recipe, I'm looking at it and going, that's not very much. I mean, I'm drinking 16 ounces of beer, you know.
Right.
And so you've got to be careful with this. I mean, there is, other than the splash of Coke, you know, I guess you could, if you have two shots of alcohol, though.
Yeah, that's pretty strong.
And if you filled it up, if you did a whole pint of Guinness, so if you put it in a 16-ounce glass.
That would be fun.
I'm not sure how you're going to function after.
Well, I'm just reading it. It's filled with Guinness. I think it is a big glass.
So this is, I posted this video on the Facebook page too. And so this was the masked bartender.
Right.
Like there was a great video, the production value. Well, I don't know, but so some guy standing there with a mask on and he's pouring this, but he had that whole pitcher and then whatever it was, and so he gave it a splash, and then he poured the whole Guinness in it, and it was in a pint-sized glass when he poured that. So,
yeah, I mean, maybe that helps you kind of stretch out the drink though. So as you have like a, you know, since Guinness, we just said it's not that strong, so maybe having that full Guinness give you a nice dilution and you get a little more drink to drink. So that's what I like. I like to have a drink that you can at least keep drinking it, and you don't feel just like a right away. I'm not a big shot, although that was great, the car bomb. I'm not a big shots guy just because you're just concentrating so much into your at once. I like to have my drink and enjoy it.
I totally agree with you. Like, I want to stretch this thing out. And one of the reasons what I think maybe the shot was is just too many bad shot experiences. And I don't like to drink my alcohol that way. I want to sit down and enjoy it and have fun with people. But so you look at just throwing back shots. Yeah, I did that. I don't need to do that anymore. And So I like to be able to stretch it out. And I think pouring, doing this as a 16-ounce pint would be
I think that would be good. Okay. Yeah. Maybe some ice in there, too. I don't know. Ice and beer always sounds weird, but it might work.
Yeah. Well, and you know, actually, in thinking about this, how this has a fuller mouthfeel, that's coming from the beer. I mean, I hadn't really even thought about it until you said beer in your ice in your beer.
Yeah.
Because that's the one thing I think about is just then all of a sudden that weird funky thing that happens when you put an ice cube in a beer. But that's what's happening here with that beer is it's giving it some really nice body to it as well. Of course, we're doing these little tiny things, so you would essentially be drinking your beer to begin with, but it works out okay.
Yeah, that's a fun one. That's a good one. I'm just looking at some of these funny ones. The Leprechaun Leap. It's, again, nothing to do with Irish.
They're always after my Lucky Charms.
Yeah, vodka, ginger, liqueur, kiwi. I see cocktails with eggs. I don't know where I stand on that one.
Okay, so
this one's
so,
got no, egg wait, and did, lemon.
Did I? We like our very first show, maybe our second or third show. I talked about making.
Yes.
I remember what I was
with
using?
With it was raw egg.
It was a beer. It was beer nog.
It was beer nog.
And yeah, you know that's. I liked it, and I liked the taste of it, and everything. But still, I couldn't quite get over the fact that this was a raw egg. Now, I will drink an Orange Julius until there's no tomorrow. I don't have a problem with a raw egg in my Orange Julius, but for some reason, in an alcohol drink where there's probably a little more preservative in it.
Yeah.
But then you think about like office parties of old where they would have their eggnogs sitting out all day or all night, and you just think, God, how did these people not? How are we still?
They also drank three martinis at lunch.
Well, which, so they were pickled on top of it, so everything was in good shape. I guess.
Which I always said, I wish I was born in that time. I always feel like I was born in the wrong decade.
Really?
Yeah, it's, you know, the three martini lunch sounds awesome.
Well, come on, you're in the biz.
Well, that's true. I guess we do have a three martini lunch, but it would just be. I mean, it's one of those things. These guys come in, you know, Mad Men, and not to get off topic, but Mad Men, you go into the office, and there's a little bar in your office. You don't see that anymore.
Well, for good reason, I think. But yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, so there's in my life, there's been a couple conferences lately, and it's been not for me, but like my wife is supporting me and everything, so anyway, they're talking about conferences and just the nightlife and everything that comes after that, and then I think, you know, these people are professionals, and I think about any professional conference at these. I only gave you like a half.
That's okay.
All right. That's true. So all these people that are going to these professional conferences where they're supposed to function during the day, go to conferences. And then I think about our industry conferences.
Right.
No,
you're drinking.
You're expected to start drinking at 8 o'clock in the morning, and you drink all the way through. And then.
But you're not allowed to be sloppy.
Well, that's true. And so, I mean, yeah. So, I mean, if you're sloppy drunk, then nobody wants you around. But really, I'm looking forward to, and then we had Alex last week, you know, inviting us to an industry tasting kind of thing, and I look at that and go, oh, this is like a conference where we get to, where we could go and drink beer or drink alcohol, and it's expected of us. So
I think now we have a show where we drink alcohol.
Right. I mean, so like this whole industry is just the best. I don't know why anyone does anything else. I mean, really, other than maybe, no, not even that. So, I mean, we're truly living a blessed life where we get to be around all this fabulous drink. And
it's actually, it's a great time for it right now. You bring up a good point because the whole craft movement and craft distilling, craft beer, you know, it's a great time. People are really, really putting a effort into what they're making. It's great. And it's great to be around in that time where you get to see and taste all that stuff and people getting really passionate like Alex and stuff. But one thing I'm really passionate about is whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
I love whiskey. And somebody posted earlier that the Irish don't make great. This is not verbatim, but the Irish don't make great whiskey. But I like that one. Who's referring to the Redbreast?
Right.
I don't take a stand on where my whiskey comes from. If it's a good whiskey, it's a good whiskey.
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about whiskeys. I do know that if there's a 20-year-old Macallan and it's not $40, then it's worth it for me.
Right. And it's not going to be $40, right?
You're probably like a $20 glass.
Oh, right.
But no, that's what I mean. Like if I'm in a restaurant, whatever. And then, but so I went to Trader Joe's, and they've got a single malt Irish whiskey. And I'm perfectly happy with it. In fact, I almost brought it tonight, except for there was only about this much left in the bottom of it. So I know that, I mean, just proof is in the bottle. You look at it and you pull it out of the cabinet and you go, oh, wait, there's not enough even here to share, so I can't bring it. And so you know that it was a good pour.
Yeah, so I thought we'd do a little comparison. We have two of the most prominent brands in Irish whiskey, and probably one more than the other, Jameson. One of the most recognized, probably Bushmills used to be, but these two are probably the most recognized brands in Irish whiskey. So you got your Bushmills Original and your Jameson, and the lighter of the two, which we'll get into, the lighter is the Bushmills. And that is because of blending. And so you're blending your lighter whiskey with the stronger whiskeys, and Jameson has less of that. And the Redbreast we had earlier, which we kind of went backwards, we had the best one first, but that's probably a good thing.
Right.
That was totally unblended and all single. And what was really interesting as a beer guy, you'll appreciate this, Curtis, was malted and unmalted barley together. And something like a 3-hour mashing to get everything out of that just so that you can get all your sugars and stuff.
Yeah, when you first told me that it was unmalted, I just kept trying to think of, well, how are they getting any sugars out of this? But really, in that mashing, what they're doing is they're malting it just a little bit. I mean, they're not getting any of the germination or anything else, but really they're pulling out a lot of the flavors out of that. They're pulling the flavors out of that unmalted barley. So you were just giving these a smell.
What a difference in the smell. I mean, the Bushmills, alcoholic. And I'm not knocking either of these.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, right off the bat, just the Bushmills, you just get that alcohol, right? It burns your nostrils.
Yeah.
And the Jameson, it's really weird. It's a whole different...
Rounder.
Rounder.
There aren't any edges on it. I didn't have the – what was the whiskey – what was the name of that one tonight?
Redbreast. 12-year-old.
So I've never had that one, and I haven't had any of these here either. And so a lot of what I was looking for in Irish cocktails, they were using Bushmills in a lot of these cocktails. And so I don't know. Does Bushmills go to – like a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old.
Oh, yeah. And so does Jameson. So Bushmills goes regular. They have, I believe, 10. They have a 16. And then they have, like, even an older one. And then Jameson goes, the 18 is, like, a really nice Jameson. And then you got your special reserve. So all of them have their stuff. And you'll notice that the Jameson or the Bushmills, they don't actually state the age on them. So
this was fascinating for me. So... the reason being
is because they really don't want you to know the youngest malt that's there. So the Redbreast we had, right on the side, it said no whiskey younger than 12 years old in this whiskey. So that's nice to know. So just so you guys know, if you're looking at Scotch or if you're looking at Irish, that number on there, that's your youngest, which is nice. I think that's a great law, because we're telling you the youngest that's there. There could be older whiskey in there.
So through ATF laws, what the Alcohol Bureau. So when I'm talking about alcohol rules? Is it the ATF or is this AT?
Well, this is actually Scottish and Irish
law. Oh, so this is international.
This is like their own law.
Okay,
like,
so they may be blending an 8, a 10, a 15, a 20, whatever it is,
right.
On up. They may be blending those, but if they blend those, then they have to put
8,
the lowest number,
on there.
And so.
So that's why they don't even put a number on.
Okay, so yeah.
So you don't have to put a number. But if you're going to put an age, you have to put the youngest.
Very good. So we're looking at Jameson. Now, what's the highest range on Jameson?
I believe it's the there's a vintage series.
Oh, wait. No, what's
Johnny Walker Black. So this is Scotch. I brought this for comparison.
Okay, so that's – so Scotland. Okay, so let's take – Jameson,
just to go up another level, they have the 12-year-old.
Okay.
Which means that the youngest that you're getting in that bottle is a 12-year-old. And then if you go into 18, you got the youngest going to be 18. So it's really just a matter of this is your youngest thing, so these are blended. We were looking at pictures earlier. There's I have the utmost respect for these people who are blenders, master blenders. It just blows me away that they can take several barrels of whiskey, taste them separately, then blend them together and figure out the house blend and always make sure that this Jameson that I'm buying, that you're buying, is always going to taste like Jameson.
Yeah, these people are by far the most this person, whoever it is the most important person in that organization, because if their palate is off,
right.
then they're sunk.
Because people are buying
this Jameson, and they're expecting it to taste the same
yes.
every single time.
Every time. From now and 5 years down the road, 5 years ago, it should always taste the same.
Right. And this isn't just high-end distilled spirits.
No.
We're talking so we were just at a couple weeks ago or a month ago, whatever it was, we were at Firestone Walker. They have a barrel tester who blends everything and is tasting it. I mean, these are bionic palates that we're talking about. New Belgium has their taster or their blender. This woman, just I can't imagine the palate and the things that she pulls out. And then even going as far as Budweiser. I mean, and maybe more so than anyone else, because in any craft beer, you're people who are enjoying that are expecting maybe just a little bit of variance.
Right.
They give you a little more
leeway on the variance.
But the macro drinkers, they want that Budweiser, yes. No matter where they're at, whether it's in Singapore or if it's in Ventura, California. They want those things to taste exactly the same. And how do they do it? They've got these trained tasters.
It's amazing. I mean, I have a lot of respect for the master blenders. How do you do that? And in wine, it's the same thing. You have, when you talk about blends, and you'll see on there, it'll say 4% of Petit Sirah and 8% of this. And we've had many winemakers in Ojai, and it's like, and the first thing, it's like, can you really tell 3% of, Petit Sirah in your blend? And they're like, yes, you can. And it's like, I mean, that's amazing.
Well, and just to give a shout out to the show that was on right before us, and I'm not sure if it was live, whatever. So you go to My Buzz Radio, listen to what is it, the palate,
Pleasing the Palate. Yeah, that
Pleasing
was
the Palate. And she's she owns a business here,
the wine rack
here in Ventura, but the two of those two talking about wines, how they were blending it and getting,
yeah,
okay, I want mouthfeel from this one, and I want this from that, and put
earth from this,
right?
Pepper from this one. It's amazing.
Yeah. So these, give a listen if you want to know more about how wine is put together. Definitely go check that one out. But the same things that they're talking about is what happens in all of these. It's not specific to wines. It's not specific to spirits. All the way through, if you want a uniform drinking experience for your customers, or if they're expecting, maybe that's more to the point, is that your customers are expecting a uniform taste,
yeah.
then these are the most important people in your organization. So one of the things that we were looking at right before this was the whiskey. God, why can't I remember Redbreast?
Redbreast.
There we go.
12-year-old. Okay. Middleton Distillery.
So they use to help me out with that, because I can't remember.
The single pot still.
The single pot still. So last week we had Alex from Refined Distillery, and he was talking about the still, and it goes up 13 steps, and then they do it again, and they do it again, right, and again. This is something that's like old world that they kept, and they just keep on doing and doing.
And it's unique to – definitely unique to Irish whiskey and unique to Irish and Scotch. So we don't really do – every once in a while you'll see a pot-stilled whiskey. So now you know. When you see that on an American whiskey, you're like, okay, that's a pot still. So it looks completely different. It looks like a big – it actually looks like a something you would mash in, a brewing kettle. I mean, something like a like Sam Adams, you always see the commercials,
right,
with the copper kettle. Mm-hmm. It kind of looks like one of those.
So they take all of their – whether it's malted or unmalted grain, they throw it into this giant kettle. They let it sit for up to what you were saying, 3 hours?
Three hours for mashing and then fermenting and then
And it ferments in that.
I don't know if it actually ferments in that, but I know once it's ready, it goes into that, and it's direct fire. And so every batch is actually fired from that still. So it's not like, I guess you could describe it as like a factory. It's not a factory of just like stuff coming in and distilling and distilling and distilling and distilling. These are like almost like single batch distillations.
This might be a good question for any listeners out there. Who can call in and set us straight. But when we were looking at the pictures of it, when they're talking about mashing and fermentation, that it was this single pot, that leads me to think that it is all taking place in that, so that they mashed, they threw in the yeast, they fermented it. So maybe they drained the that's, for me, it's speculation right now, but it led me to believe that everything happened in that, and then they fired it up, and then they distilled it. So if you've got some definitive answers for us on single pot distilling, does it ferment and distill in that same one? Give us a call. Our phone number here is 805-744-1900. That is 805-744-1900, and we'll get you on after the break. So we're going to be heading into last call here pretty quick. Who knew this would go so fast without with just us two drinking and enjoying the evening? But
yeah, we'll come back and we'll talk some more about these whiskeys, and then we'll go into last call. We'll do the black label.
So I'm just looking around. I've got a couple empty Guinness cans, a couple empty Murphy's cans, and I've got some scotch. I've been going through the Bushmills, and now I'm ready to enjoy the Jamesons here too.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us on Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. We'll be right back after the break. MyBuzzRadio.com.
You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
Drinking, 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 fight.
So
that's a great song. Even though I don't like to drink and fight, but that's a great song.
Right. And what's interesting is that I've never felt the urge to sing on the show before, but just then with Murphy's and Guinness all around, Jameson, Bailey's, and then what do we have here? Johnny Walker. So I mean, we're just no wait. What do we have?
Yeah, we got Black Label now. We went a little Scottish on it. Just to compare.
So all of a sudden, I feel like singing, which I guess is better than fighting, although
right. It
could be just as harmful to you and everyone else if you haven't listened to me sing for too long. So
I just threw something in the mix here just to mess with you.
Right. So we did the Bushmills, and I've got a little bit here, and there it goes.
So for the most part, Irish whiskeys are not peated.
No.
There is an exception. It's called Cunamara, and I'm probably butchering the name, but... And that just right on the label says we are peated Irish whiskey, but Scotch is peated for the most part.
Yeah, so
there are exceptions, of
course. So you've got, you know, when I think of Ireland, I don't think of bogs. When I think of Scotland, right. There we go.
There we go.
Then you start thinking boggy kind of peaty things. So yeah, I hadn't made that connection yet, and then none of these are
except for this last one,
are
right?
peaty until we get to this one. And anyone, and especially my wife, will know that I am really sensitive to that peat. And we've got We've got some great people walking by. And they are enjoying.
They were having a good time.
They're enjoying their St. Patrick's Day primer too, but going back to the peatiness, that I have a real sensitivity to it, and so it's I can handle just a really tiny bit of it. And so you pour Black Label. You go ahead and tell us about Black Label.
So so the major difference is we went from Bushmills, Jameson, which of the two I feel like. The Jameson's a little more rounded. Looks like it spent a little more time in oak, or at least whatever they blended had a little more time.
Deeper
in the
color.
Oak, deeper color. And then we went to the Black Label, which is a blended Scotch whiskey of different distilleries. So they actually buy casks from other distilleries. And that's what it means when you say blended Scotch whiskey. So single malt all comes from it, like Lagavulin, the Macallan, Balvenie, Ardbeg. Ardbeg, by the way, the peatiest, claimed to be the peatiest scotch in the world, whiskey.
That has been sitting in my cabinet forever, and it has about two, maybe three shots missing out of it. That's all, because you can't handle much more of that. So that is fascinating. So Johnny Walker isn't a distillery, per se. They're a blender?
They're a blender, yeah. They do produce probably some of their own distillate. And age it and use that as like a sort of a blend, but they don't produce. There's no single malt Johnny Walker. It's more about the blending. That's what it's all about at Johnny Walker. So the black. So there is the red, and most people skip over the red. I shouldn't say anything bad about the red label, but as a whiskey fan or aficionado, whatever, you kind of skip the red, and even some people skip the black. But for me, growing up, the black label was something. It was like a staple. My uncles and my grandpa and everybody was like black label. On the rocks, and it's so I kind of grew up drinking Johnny Walker Black, and it's a 12-year-old. So the youngest, like we were saying, the youngest cast that went into this is 12 years old. There could be stuff that's 18, 16 years old in there, but again, it's always going to taste like this. And so some of the ones that are in here are stuff like Talisker and some of these peaty Islay, which you don't like, Curtis. So that means. Anytime you see something like Islay, stay away from it.
Okay.
It's just notoriously peatier. It's coastal. It's actually an island. It's Islay. So it's like Isle of Skye and Islay, stay away from those. Speyside, Highland, you probably like those. The Macallans,
Highland, definitely.
Right. So less peaty, more of that kind of sweetness that, especially depending what cast they use. What a contrast between these three, though, because you go really, really just kind of raw, the Bushmills. Jameson, kind of more rounded, but no peaty smell or anything. Mm-hmm. Actually, kind of a sweet smell to that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then go to the Johnny Walker, and it's like, okay, we got some Band-Aids and Band-Aids and ashtrays.
So, yeah, so like it's the Band-Aid part that is really pronounced to me. I'm losing the beer term for Band-Aid, but it's an off flavor in beer, and so
Actually not an off flavor in this, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's just a natural.
The peat is there. Yeah. I mean that's it. You can't get away from it. The water that they're using for it, it's already in that. So and I'm out of the Bushmills, and I've got some Jameson left, but even. Looking at the color, as we were going through and we were talking how Jameson was a deeper color, you look at which one do you have there? Jameson right in the middle. So even still, that is a little slightly deeper color than what's happening on there. So there was an older whiskey or aged whiskey in that as well.
In the Johnny Walker.
Right. So somewhere they got a little extra color.
Yeah, and a funny thing about Scotch is they're actually allowed to use a little caramel. I know that sounds totally weird, but they can actually have a little color. That's like the bitter face equivalent in Scotch.
This is the Keystone bitter beer face. Yeah, because
finish is seriously peaty.
Oh yeah,
not even considered a really peaty whiskey.
No, I don't doubt it. Yeah, because there is a lot of what I like in that. In words like Ardbeg,
there's nothing in what you like.
There's nothing in that I like, but this one, all of a sudden, it's this. Yeah, it's the peat all the way through, and I don't want to talk you know, I don't want to use the term Band-Aid or rubber or anything like that, just because that might turn some people off. But
it is kind of weird when you say that to people, they're like, Band-Aid? I've never eaten a Band-Aid, but it's like...
But the smell of it, you know exactly what it tastes like. But for somebody who likes peat, this is going to be something that they like.
Yeah.
And so I can appreciate that. So I'm trying not to use maybe a negative term like Band-Aid, rubber.
Yeah, smoky, peaty.
Right. So
peaty is actually a really used, widely used term for it. So you're saying peaty. It's just kind of implying like, okay, I know what you mean. So if you've never had peaty, you don't have a reference. But as soon as you have it, you're like, okay, I know what you mean by peaty. And in terms of peaty, this is like training wheels peaty.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, there's...
this is like peaty intro to peaty.
I totally understand, yeah. And I don't know what it is. I mean, I wish I had some like bionic sense perception for hop flavors, you know, like separate hop flavors. But no, the smallest amount of peat in there, and I can't do it. And even on smoky beers, beers that are smoked, I end up getting that bacony rubber Band-Aid kind of flavor out of it, which you would think that since I love bacon and I could eat it all day long, that I would love a beer that had bacon in it.
Not
but I don't know.
Right?
I will eat bacon and I'll drink beer, and those two will go together well. But go, you know, those peaty flavors just don't. For some reason, I can't do it.
Yeah. So you very well may be an Irish whiskey fan.
Well, Irish whiskey certainly
American,
except
of course.
For now, what Johnny Walker is
Scotch. So it's
there we go.
It's a blended Scotch whiskey. So
and then when I led into this, I was talking about no peat, and then. For some reason, I went right into being Johnny Walker being an Irish whiskey, but it's not. It's a Scotch.
It's a Scotch whiskey, yeah.
That's where the peat comes from, because you're not going to find any peat, although you said...
There's one, Coonamara, something like that. It's Coonemara.
So I think if you say it like a leprechaun, it's okay.
It's always tough. Even the Scotch words for the different regions, it's like... You know, people say, it's Isla, it's Islay. And it's like, no, it's Isla. It's like, okay, it's Isla. Then you talk to a Scotsman and it's like, yeah, it's Isla. You're like, okay.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be any Irish person or person of Irish descent that is going to be insulted if we talk like leprechauns every time we do. Or maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong on this. I don't know. But it could go either way. So
what do you think of – we talked about Bushmills. What about Jameson?
The Jameson is between the two, I really like the Jameson. The Redbreast earlier was really
I think that
nice.
Was – I honestly, I hate to say because I love Black Label, but I think the Redbreast was better than all of them. But, again, not peated in a way, but that was just a really delicious whiskey, and the way that it just – the smell and the taste of it was awesome. So smooth. We always hear that term in whiskey, smooth, smooth, smooth finish. Because you don't want to. To me, the Bushmills has that alcoholic, harsh finish that you kind of, like, you think of beer, you know, when you have that kind of warming finish. It's like, okay, warming is okay. Alcoholic is like, oh, wow, I don't want to taste the alcohol.
Yeah, there's some sharper edges on the Bushmills.
And the Jameson seems to be more, you know, a little more smoother.
So the age on the Jameson, which we don't know. But
we don't know.
But it could be anywhere from 8 to 18. Who knows what it is. But
right.
But so you're kind of throwing through the webpage there.
Yeah, well, I was just looking because we were talking last week about distilling, and most Irish whiskey has to be triple distilled. So minimum triple distilled. So... Alex was talking about 10 times distilled, which is just like
beyond. He had
13 distilled, which is right. Way beyond whiskey levels.
Yeah.
And he was also talking about using some of the first cut and some of the last cut because you want some of those flavors to come in. So it was really great to kind of go back to whiskey after talking to Alex because it's like, wait a minute, I feel like I know a little more about distilling now. But yeah, triple distilled. And they're claiming, they're saying it bold, Jameson triple distilled, but the truth is that all the whiskey has to be triple distilled, all Irish whiskey. by law. So, but it's kind of funny how they kind of make it a bold thing, like, hey, we're triple distilled. Oh.
So, imagine this. Nobody has called us to set us straight on the single pot. But this was that was something that was fascinating to me when we pulled that up and started. So you know, do yourself a favor. If you're interested in Irish whiskey, look at the single pot. Do a Google search and find and learn a little bit about it, because these facilities are just they're amazing, and the fact that they're mashing in there and then fermenting out on that. So Joby's looking through, which is this, the Jameson?
Yeah, I think the Jameson's great for people who are just kind of like, I don't even know what you're talking about. What is this? What does that mean? They have a great little kind of easy to read little diagram where it's like, okay, here's what's happening. Here's how we make your whiskey. And then they had pictures of the master distiller and the master blender, who, like you said, is the heart of the, and then they even have a great picture. I hope this guy's not listening. Of the Cooper Master, they obviously have their own cooperage, so they do their own oak barrels. I mean, they're really that into it because they're not using bourbon barrels and stuff like that, where some of the other guys are. So the fascinating thing about whiskey is, and I feel like we've been on this whole barrel thing lately, and it's really cool because right. I love barrel aged stuff, mm-hmm. and whiskey is really all about the barrels, because once you distill and once you mash, you have white whiskey, basically White Dog.
And I have had, well, one, I've had moonshine before,
right.
and that is the worst of the worst of the worst. I mean, there's when I was talking about Gilby's last week and how harsh that was in glass, and you were begging for mercy afterwards. No, I couldn't even get to the tasting part. Just inhaling the moonshine was just about set me over the edge, and so. You know, not that Jameson or any of these others that their moonshine or their whiskey is,
but they don't even sell their white whiskey.
No. Yeah, the white whiskey, and then once it goes into the barrels, and then that's where
the magic happens.
Oh yeah, and so when we were talking about Firestone Walker, where when is the beer ready, and then even with Festival Barrel House a couple weeks ago,
yeah.
You know, knocking on the barrel, are you ready? Yes, we are. Whatever. You know, they're constantly tasting this. But nothing illustrates that more than, say, whiskey, where it just, they're in there for, I don't know, what's a minimum age?
Eight
years?
Yeah.
I don't even know if I've seen an 8 year. Usually, like, Macallan is 10, and then there's the 12,
right.
15,
so
20.
Most of the stuff that doesn't say an age has probably got 8 year or 5 year stuff
okay.
in it. But, people always wonder, why do 50 and 40 and 30-year-old whiskeys cost so much? But the truth is that imagine if you had a barrel and you filled it up with whiskey, and I said, Curtis, in 40 years we're going to see we're gonna bottle whatever's in here. And the biggest thing you have is you have what's called the angel share, which is evaporation. And not just evaporation I just saw Jim Beam made something called the Devil's Cut, because the Angel's Share is what evaporates in the air, but the Devil's Cut is what goes into the wood, what gets soaked up by the wood, which I think is the coolest thing. I haven't tried it. I want to try it, but they found a way to get the whiskey out of the wood that's in the barrel. And so you have two things. You have the Angel's Share and the Devil's Cut. And so how much whiskey is left after 40 years? And then you have to think to yourself, you've been sitting on this for 40 years. There's probably 2/3 of the barrel left. So now you're going to bottle that. So how much can you charge? You're going to charge a premium. And it's like it's a membership to an exclusive club of, I'm going to be one of the only 350 people in the world to have this bottle, right? Something like that. Or 400 bottles.
Yeah, I think, you know, as bucket lists go, for people who are doing whatever it is that's on their bucket list, tasting a 30-year, a 40-year-old scotch. I mean, you're talking in that, what is it? So is that a 2 ounce or is that an ounce that you're drinking? So when you go to
Probably an ounce and a half when you're going to a bar.
Okay, you're right.
Yeah, ounce and a half to 2 ounces, depending on the pour.
Okay, so you're looking at something that's like 30 years old. It's costing a couple hundred bucks?
Yeah, probably. At the minimum, low end, 75 to 100. Our partiers are back. But 75 to 100 and probably $200-$300 for some of the crazy ones. I mean, Macallan 50-year-old. You know, things like that are like $600 for a shot. But bucket list, you know, that's what it is. It's like, if you're hardcore about whiskey, you're going to.
Right. And at some point, I would like to be able to have the money to purchase that.
Disposable income.
To purchase that bucket list. But it's, that's just to, because, I mean, I've had a 20-year-old, and that is just, of course, now we're did you hear that? That whistle I just did? That tooth whistle?
No, don't worry. No, we didn't catch it.
Okay, nobody caught that. Good. So we're going into scotch, but, I mean, I've had a 20-year-old scotch. And is there anything that's like that's comparable to on the Irish side?
So you know, I mean, that's funny because I don't think the Irish, the big – They just don't command the big prices like the Scotch does. And so I don't know if there's no demand or what they've done. There's a few. I mean, Middleton's is one of the most famous. That's who makes Redbreast that we had. Mm-hmm. And Middleton's, I mean, their entry-level one is about $150 for a bottle. They don't make it all the time. It's only made at certain times of the year, and it's aged. I can't even remember. It doesn't even have an age on it, but it's just – here's some of the best of the best of the Irish. And Jameson and some of these guys have gone into it, but they can't get near the prices and the rarity that the Scotches do. It's, you know, in the world of whiskey, Scotch is the king.
So just kind of world history-wise, were Scots making whiskey long before the Irish were? Or is it just that they were making a superior product?
Probably the demand. I think the Irish whiskey was probably drunk in Ireland, and whereas the Scotch got around.
Well, yeah, because it
makes sense.
It's a part of the island, so yeah.
So Scotch got around, and if you look at world consumers and the demand, Scotch has the highest demand. But whiskey's made all over. It's pretty cool. I mean, you get into some of the ones, and we can talk about them. But you have like Japanese whiskey. You know, they have their own single malt and American whiskeys, but the king is Scotch, and it's going to always get those prices. I mean, I have never seen an American whiskey go for $30,000-$40,000 a bottle, but there is Scotch that goes for $30,000-$40,000. I've never had it.
Really?
No. What? One day we'll crack one.
Right. Well, that'll be an event where, you know, you get several hundred people who will divvy up their money to go give it.
I'm
thinking of an OBC kind of.
I like that. Like a pitch in.
Right, right. We'll all pitch in to get our ounce and a half taster out of that. So one of the things we were like, so excited to get back in and tasting all these that when we don't have a guest, we're kind of, I don't know, discombobulated maybe a little bit. So one of the things I forgot to say as soon as we came in from the break was how I'm getting home. Because I've had plenty of alcohol where there is some nights I'm like, yeah, you know, if I hung around at Barrel House for an hour and drank some Diet Coke, I'd be okay.
Right.
Tonight is not one of those nights.
No.
I've had plenty of Irish whiskey, and it takes a lot of Guinness to get to where I am right
well,
now.
Well, right.
But it's there. So, really,
how do you get home?
So I use We're Driving, and it's a driving service, DD driving service. They also do, you know, if you can't drive, they'll take you to the hospital, whatever it is, back and forth to the hotel, to the airport, to Lakers
concert,
game,
yeah,
to Lakers games. Staples. They'll go up and down the coast. So anyway, that's WeirdDriving.com, W-E-R-E driving.com, and they get me home safe every single show, and it's the best service. I was talking to our guest next week, and yes, next week there will be one of Ventura's finest. Actually, two of them will be in here.
Oh, wow. We're driving is definitely...
And he, in our email back and forth, he had said that he had used We're Driving, and he loves it. So
nice.
There you go. So
endorsed by Ventura's finest.
Right, endorsed by a police official. So,
and actually, many bars and restaurants definitely call We're Driving.
They do a wonderful job, and you know, I tell them where to pick me up, and they come and pick me up when I ask them to, and they drive me home. But if you're going to do, if you've been out, say, an office party, and all of a sudden, happy hour kind of thing, oh, I've had too many to drink, give them a call. They'll get you and your car home safely. It's the best part. That's the best part about it. So you wake up in the next morning.
No walk of shame.
Well, so maybe not the best part, because you're still going to be going to work in the morning hungover and not wanting to be there. But it's there for you. So give We're Driving a call and go to the website, weredriving.com, and you can see their pricing, all of the concentric circles, so you can see how much it's going to cost you to get home. And I can guarantee you it's going to be cheaper. Well, I won't guarantee, but I will tell you that it's going to be cheaper than a taxi. And your car's home, so it's all good.
But, Curtis, this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's...
I like the... it's like a unscripted, no... free format.
So one of the things I was really, really worried about, that it was going to go like a freeform rap, which, if you've ever listened to freeform rap, like 99% of the time, it is the worst thing you have ever listened to. And so I'm like, oh, man, what if we can... Oh, I'm so... So anyway, I got over that.
Whiskey and Guinness.
Right. I mean, Bailey's. How can that not fuel a good show?
Yeah, that was great.
So we...
Next week, come back with L.A. Ale Works.
L.A. Ale Works. And
Officer...
Aguilar.
Aguilar he's, from the Ventura.
He's actually Captain.
Captain,
Aguilar.
Sorry. VPD.
And he will have, he'll have a guest with him.
Awesome.
Somebody who's talking about... who does DUI kind of educations. And so...
So it's our public service announcement / Ale Works show. It's going to be great.
And he was like, well, I'm worried about whether the show is going to be okay. And so, no, we take this seriously. I mean, part of our show is sponsored by We're Driving. So we're in good shape. We understand enjoying it.
No, having fun is one thing. Getting home safe.
Getting home safe is the important part. So we were... I thought we were going to talk over it. Go ahead and start that one there. Hey, how's that?
It's pretty good.
So on the edit, I'm going to cut that out.
So we'll see you guys next week with Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
And I'm looking forward to it. Catch you next week.
MyBuzzRadio.com.
You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.